Very interesting Mishnah, a very interesting piece of Gemara. That's the Hakdoma to the Megillah. The Mishnah is on Daf Yutes Amud Aleph. The latter half of the Mishnah. Umeihechan kairi odomus ha Megillah b'yotzi bo yidei chavosa. How much do you have to read to be yotzi rechiv? Very interesting question. Not a question I think any of us would have asked. We would have imagined you have to read the whole thing. Rameyer oimer kula. Rameyer says you have to read the whole thing. And we pass on like Rameyer, unusually so. Because here we have Rabbi Yehuda oimer meish Yehudi. And Rabbi Yossi oimer meachar advorim ha'ila. So that's a chiddush altogether if we pass on like Rameyer. Because Rameyer and Rabbi Yehuda, we always pass on like Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yossi is nubuk olimo, so we usually pass on like Rabbi Yossi. And here yet the halacha wound up like Rameyer. Now, in the Gemara, we're going to find we don't have all the days yet. So here we have, so far in the Mishnah, we have the entire Megillah, Me'ish Yehudi, Achar Advar Me'la, the rise of Haman, that's Rabbi Yossi's view. And then there's a question, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Tanya Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Tesefta. Oimer, Rabbi Balailah, from Balailah, in other words, there's where Yeshua begins. That's the turning point of the Megillah, Balailah. Is Amar Rav Yochanan, so Rav Yochanan said, V'kulon mikro echadorshu. All four of these dais are based on an interpretation of one pasuk. V'atichtov Esther Amalku Mordechai Yehudi is called Tokef. So Tokef would perhaps mean the Iker, the principal factors. Some Sefer quotes someone who says that Tokef, a psik that it says Tokef means the broad issues, the details, the minutiae were left to the Torah Shabbat Peh to fill it. Is Mandi Amar Kula, the one that says you have to write your mayor, is Toikvush al Achashverosh. It's a study of Achashverosh and what he did. So Achashverosh will see how insignificant the first parakeet was. The first parakeet is a study in Achashverosh. Among the Omer Me'ish Yehudi, so he says, Toikvul Shal Mordechai. The Megillah, the principal portion of the Megillah is the story of Mordechai Yehudi. Among the Omer Me'achar Advorim Ma'ila, the rise of Haman, is Toikvul Shal Haman. The essence of the Megillah is the story of Haman. Among the Omer Balayla Ahu, that's a Rishum Ben Elazar, is Toikvul Shal Nes. What was the principal part of the Nes? And that begins from Balailahu. Till then, that set the stage for the necessity for the Nisim. Rav Huna Amar Mehocha. Rav Huna said, it comes from a different pasuk. It says, Umarro'u al kochum u'igi aleihim. Why did they see? Well, in other words, what did they attempt to do? What was the plan of action? And what were the consequences? What prompted them to use the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash? He said the 70 years that the Revi'im predicted ended. So we decided he's home scot-free. And what did he reap from it? The Kotel Vashti. The end of this whole Suda, it's spun out of control and he winds up killing Vashti. Right? Why was Mordechai so provocative in his dealings with Haman? Al Kocho, the Shobi Nafshi Avoy Dezor. He acted as Avoy Dezor. He warned Adon Avoy Dezor. And what was the upshot? This Rachash Nisa. What prompted Haman? What motivated him to undertake this mission? That's what prompted him. And what was the repercussions? So we have to study Haman. Why did Achashverosh bring the Sefer HaZichronos? What prompted him? al kocho, the zaminte este lahaman bahadei. Because he thought it was a conspiracy. One of the reasons that Esther invited Haman is that Ahasuerus should think that there was something going on between them. So he probably was afraid. He wasn't a paranoid. He acted like a paranoid, but he had good reason to do so. So he wasn't a paranoid. He lived with a great deal of anxiety, having usurped the throne. And he was, as we'll see, at a very tumultuous time in his reign. His political fortunes had fallen sharply. Earlier, before the period of the Megillah, he controlled all the known world, at least of that part of the world, 240 Medinas, Chazal say. By the time of the Megillah, he had already lost close to half the empire. So this was not a time for him to be complacent. He probably was concerned that if there's something going on between Haman and Esther, probably it's going to involve some type of plot against him too. They'll finish him off. Umoy Gialayim, the Nays came from this. Now, the very interesting is Omar of Chelbo, Omar of Chama Bargoria, Omar Rav, Halocha Kedibriya Imer Kula. So the Gemara itself paskins, like Rabbi. Now the Gemara adds something that's very startling. Even the person that says that you have to read from Ish Yehudi, I don't know why. You mean even him? L'chara means any of the ones that say you don't have to read the whole Megillah. It's tricho shedek suba kula. You have to have the entire Megillah written. In other words, it's not enough to just have the story of Ish Yehudi or Baal Elohu nor the Doshnas HaMelech Achar Adorim. No, you have to have the entire Megillah. So now modna ma'isa. On one hand, they have to have the whole Megillah. Less man the Pollock. The whole Megillah has to be present. But I only have to read part of it. What's it a pshat?
So then what's pshat in Tagif, in Tagif for Shemurach, Tagif for Shulhaman? That means that they're really saying that Ikrim
Megillah. In other words, the focus on them is, you know, what their particular role was, is the main.
It means the Prussian destinies? What's it sad that it's...
No, but the Shail is in what aspect? In other words, it's a study in everything that went into Haman and how it affected him, how Mordechai was instrumental, or just the rise of the Nes itself. Or it's more than that, it's a study of all the particular of the characters, what they did, and how, you know, the Rabbeinu Shalom, those machinations, you know, evolved through them.
Either way, it's really the Nes.
But the question, the second one is saying it's not so much a study of a particular aspect, it's a study of the Nes in its overarching sense. The others, it's a story of the Nes, how it played out through the particular players, and through which window is the most important one. Now, so, and it's a modern, as I said, a modern device. Maybe we don't have to read the whole Megillah, but I have to have the whole Megillah. So what's the pshat?
We just said it's very mixed now.
So the chayr, the pshat is like this. The safer is the safer. Can't leave it out. Elamai, the pshat is to Shaila Lechayr and the Gemara is what's the Pursume Nisa. The story of Purim is the story of Purim. It starts with Achashverosh and ends Yigodah Mordechai, etc. You know, Dor B'Shalom L'chol Amoy. But the Shaila is wherein is the Pursume Nisa. What's the aspect that we need for the Pursume Nisa? Is enough to follow from Mordechai? It's enough to follow from the ascent of Haman? I don't know. Even whatever, you can just lock in and with the Rabbeinu Shalom started to. Balai Lahu, the Rabbeinu Shalom begins to stir the pot. Where do we have to start? So that means that the Pesach Halacha is saying, Bechara, that we would lack in the Pursume Nisa if we didn't have the very first portion of the Megillah. Right? If we follow the view of Ish Yehudi, right? Ish Yehudi is the beginning of Perek Beis. So it means we would not understand and appreciate fully the Nes of Purim. So that means Perek Aleph adds immeasurably to our understanding of the Nisa. And that's what Rameah was Mechayev, that we have to read it. And that's in fact what we do. So I want to look a little bit at Perek Aleph. What's the toichen of Perek Aleph? Now, we're going to discover the following. Achashverosh was not much different than Haman. I mean, the Gemara says, the meeting of the two of them was the meeting of two people, Hamais and Tel Zishiva. They had a huge valley on their property that they had to fill in, but they didn't have money to pay for it. Vahoya Bayama, who the state showed up, they were making a road near the yeshiva, and they wanted a place to dump the earth. So they paid the yeshiva to accept the earth, you know, for a dump. So here you have the Balatel and the Balacharitz. Right? The one guy has a mound, the one guy has a hole in the ground, and it's a good shidduch. Well, he wants to get rid of the mound, and he wants to get rid of the hole in the ground. So this was the meeting of Achashverosh and Haman, two like-minded people. But I think there's a significant difference between them. You'll correct me if I don't see it properly, but I believe the following. Haman was a mass murderer. But what were his methods? His methods were the typical methods of most mass murderers in history. You know, make a decree, you know, organize, you know, those that were loyal to him, etc., and carry it out. Achashverosh had a deeper understanding of what was necessary. Achashverosh understood that what Haman is trying to do will not be successful unless something else happens. And that was his unique contribution. Not only did he sign off and allow everything to go forward, but he attempted to make a very unique contribution to the success of this plot. And that's really the story of Perek Aleph. We'll follow a little bit to the Sebus's interpretation. We give a star. And he tells us the following. That starts off with a very interesting question. We know there is a machlokes in Chazal. It's a machlokes in the Gemara, and the Medrash and the Shas reach two different conclusions in this machlokes. There's a statement that Vayehi always implies an es tzar, difficulty. Then the Gemara asks questions on it, and the Gemara revamps, and the Gemara says, when it says Vayehi bimei, is a time of tzar. But there are Midrashim that remain with the first Pshat Vayehi, and that's why you find many Achreinim constantly asking that Vayehi is a Tzorah, and probing what was the aspect of Tzorah in a particular parasha, based on a Midrash. But the Sivas wants to know a very simple question. You tell me, Vayehi b'mei Achashverosh. So you're telling me there was a certain time. So it tells us immediately what was the problem. It was Shvayt HaShevtim, they didn't respect the Dayonim, there was a Rav, and what Avi Melech did, etc. So it tells us immediately what the Tzara was. So where in this Vayehi B'mei, where do we see the Tzara of the Klal Yisrael? So Sagan Tzamaisa with Achashverosh, and then the queen is killed, and it's finally in Perek Gimel, Achar Baromela Gida. And that's where the problems begin. But it says it's very atypical, always Vayehi B'mei is the immediate introduction to what the problem is. And here it seems to go off on a very long aside of background issues, which are necessary later on in the Megillah, but they don't seem to address the issue of what the problem was. So he says no. He says the first pasuk tells me already what the nature of the problem was. Vayibim Achashverosh, Hu Achashverosh, we'll come back to that, the Hu Achashverosh. Amoylech mehoidu v'yad kush, Sheva v'esim v'mayam adinu. The problem, he said, was that Achashverosh was moylech mehoidu v'yad kush. Most people, he said, they decide they want to destroy Klal Yisrael. They give up before they start. Why? Because the Gemara says in Pesachim, the Rebbeinu Shlomo spread us out all over the world. So you can't succeed. So if that's what you want to do, you can give up before you start. But a person that controls the world, he controlled the entire civilized world. So all of Klal Yisrael lived under his power. So he could have attempt such a genocide. Allah Allah, you know, that's what happened in the Second World War. The Germans had a plan to conquer the world, and they pretty nearly succeeded, as we know in history. They didn't miss by too much. So within that context, they could have genocidal intentions. Whereas if you live in a little small place, you want to kill a few people, you kill a few people, but genocide is beyond your scope. But Achashverosh was Hamoylech Meodu Bechush. He had a massive empire. And he was a man, well, he had a certain belief in God. Perhaps Avodah Zarah, but nevertheless, a belief that there's some form of deity to this world. And that fate, as he would call it, fate, is significant for that reason. Because man's destiny is written in the heavens. So he said, a very strange thing happened to me. He says, I hate the Jews, and I would like to destroy them. And all the Jews in the world were under my dominion. Now I lost almost half of my empire. But all the Jews still lived in the half of the empire that he had. All the parts of his empire that he lost, he did not lose any Jews. All the Jewish community still lived in the sphere of Achashverosh. So we saw this destiny. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam has, you know, whatever he's taken away from me, but he still left me with this opportunity. So this reinforced his genocidal intentions. But he, yes.
Why would Achashverosh have such animosity towards the Jews? He's not even from Amalek. I can understand why Haman had it, but why did Achashverosh? Why would he? The Rav is just saying that he is this way.
The Gemara says so. The Shas also says so. Yeah. Shas says he wanted to kill the Jews as much as Haman did. Listen, it's hard, you know. We will never understand the full roots of anti-Semitism. Why it is that way. You know, I saw it once when I lived in Forest Hills. Some Chinese kid, that how long was he living in America then, but he was cursing the Jews. You know, it was mind-boggling. I said, I understand a Christian, whatever, it has a whole theology behind it, 2,000 years that it's, you know, preaching that brought him to this point. This guy doesn't even know what a Jew is. It's probably 2 years ago, 3 years ago, he never saw a Jew in his life. But he already learned in 2 or 3 years here to curse the Jews. So I don't think that we will ever understand the full depth of what, you know, Jew hatred is about. But Achashverosh understood the task at hand. And the receiver tells us that this was a principal goal of his, was to accomplish this genocide. So what did he wish to do? So he says he went through two steps. First is by Yomim Mahim Kishabas Amalach Hashverosh Akisem Alchusa Washer Mashushan Abira. He calls together also Mishtel Chosorov Avodov. He wants to pave the way, the political agenda for his goal. So what's the political agenda? He has a far-flung empire. So he has to get the princes from the entire empire to sign on. So what does he do? The moment that he sees Kisheva, Vayom Emaim Kisheva Samalach HaChashverosh, the 70 years ended, so he said, the Rebbeinu Shalom doesn't like these people anymore. Now he would have redeemed them. So they must be the very sinful people. So there's an opportunity at hand. And he doesn't waste a moment. As soon as the time comes, Kisheva Vashnash Sholosh Namolcho, the 70 years ended, he's right at work. And what does he do? What he does is he invites all the Sarim so that they should both see his methods and that they should join his agenda. So he says the tachlis of this party was what? Was also to destroy Klal Yisrael. This wasn't a party that the king made to celebrate that, you know, the triumph of Babel, that 70 years has passed and they're still standing with the Beis HaMikdash is not rebuilt. No, but it was an agenda. The agenda was the destruction of Klal Yisrael. Now, he understood very, very well. In Chumash, who was perhaps the most dangerous enemy of the Jewish people, and the entire Chamisha Chumshitar, who was the most dangerous enemy? What? There was someone much more dangerous than Lavan. Bilam was the most dangerous of all. Bilam was the most dangerous enemy of Klal Yisrael. For what reason? Because Bilam understood that with Lavan's approach he won't succeed. Lavan wanted to swallow them all up and poison them. They'll swallow, they'll poison him, they'll kill him, they'll steal from him. Bilam told, well, this is a waste of time. With this you're not going to succeed. How do you have to succeed? The Moran Sanhedrin tells us, Bilam told him an Eitzah, Eloheyem shel Eilu Sanizimo. The Rabbeinu Shalom despises this. So if you want to bring them down, so involve them in Znus. And from Znus, the Rabbeinu Shalom bring Charan af, and you'll succeed. Well, what did Lavan succeed in? Zero. He accomplished nothing in his agenda. Bilam killed 24,000 Jews. Because he understood that to approach Klal Yisrael, it does not suffice merely to have political power and have a political agenda. But one has to endeavor to bring the Rebbeinu Shalom behind the endeavor. But how's the Rebbeinu Shalom going to sign off on such an endeavor? So the answer is involve them in sinfulness, and particularly Znus. And Bilam succeeded because of this. Where no one else succeeded. There were many attempts, but the one that was successful was Bilam. So what did Achashverosh do? Achashverosh was a very, very cunning man. What was the nature of this party? The nature of this party was he established three things. That he had a party, a place for a mishta, he had a gina, and he had bisan, three things. Gina's bisan hamelach. So he wonders, the Nesivus, what was bisan? He says, I don't find such a shirush in all of Tanakh. I don't know such a word. So he says, you know what bisan is? Bisan means, it's from the shirush bias. But with the additional nun means of small form. So the Bisan, according to the Nesibus, he made cabanas. Cabanas. Why? Because what was his plan? His plan was the following. His plan was he's going to have a huge party. And at the party, he brought Zaynus to the Shemayim. And he's going to entice them, they'll drink or whatever. Then they're going to have the gardens to go walking in and to hang out in. But then when you want to get down to action, that's not a place to do it. You need some privacy. So he made cabanas. So everyone could go off. He understood that the way to destroy Klal Yisrael was to involve them in Znus. If he gets them involved in Znus, then the Eibush is not going to protect them. But Nochma, that wasn't enough yet. What does Achashverosh have in mind? Achashverosh knows that if he overplays his hand, so then the Rebbein Shlomo is going to say they were anusim, they were forced. The threat of the king, okay, maybe in certain things you're not supposed to do, but the Rambam says even if you do them, you're not chayav misa usually for them. So was it a pshat? So what did he do? So he did something else too. So what did he do? He made a mishnah. Well, what was the nature of this mishnah? V'hashkos b'chlei zov v'chelim b'chelim shaynim. V'yein malchus rovki yara melech. In fact, he even learns kelim b'kelim shaynim to mean that he constantly brought new supplies of zaynus so people shouldn't get bored. They might get bored if they kept seeing the same ones. So he kept supplying them with new ones. But what did he do? He was afraid that the Eibush will say it in Oynus. V'ashasiyach hados ein Oynus. Nothing at this party was forced. You sat the way you wanted to sit. You drink what you wanted to drink. You do what you wanted to. There's no compulsion in the least bit. Because he wanted to make sure that what? That any chet that they did would be absolutely belazed. There shouldn't be any mitigating circumstance from his side to be able to be melamed zchus on them. It's therefore v'ashasiyach hados ein oynus. And he says, what does it mean? Chazal say, Omru Chazal Kirtzon, it says Kirtzon Ishmir, Kirtzon Mordechai. Haman, it doesn't mean Mordechai and Haman personally, but rather Kirtzon of the Tzaddikim. Mordechai typifies the Tzaddikim, and Haman typifies the Rishon. You can act however you want to. You have absolute freedom to do what you want. No one's telling you what to do. No one compels you what to do. Do whatever you want. So that the chet of Klal Yisrael should be absolutely bemazed. So in that sense, he transcended Haman. Haman understood that he's going to kill them, like you kill any political rival. But Ahasuerus said, there's an awful lot of people that tried that and they didn't succeed. Why didn't they succeed? Because they only concerned themselves with the goof of Klal Yisrael. The Neshama, they didn't affect. And if you leave the Neshama the way it's supposed to be, the Rebbeinu Shlomo is not signing on to this deal. So he was much more cunning than Haman. You know, we look at him as he was a dupe. He wasn't a dupe. And he wasn't a fool. He wasn't a fool. He was extremely wily. And his plan is to involve Klal Yisrael at the worst level of Mazed. So that the Rebbeinu Shalom won't stand together with them. If the Rebbeinu Shalom doesn't stand together with them, then I can accomplish the goal and do what I want. And in this, he had a willing partner. He had a willing partner. As Chazal tells us, Vashti was not to be outdone. she was equal partner in arranging the nature of this particular event, what was going to take place. So they approach Klal Yisrael from a standpoint of understanding the ruchnius of Klal Yisrael too. This theme we find in the second Beis HaMikdash too. That when the Roman general came and he shot arrows and they all went towards Yerushalayim, so what was his reaction? He said, Rabbeinu Shalom, he said, God in heaven, he said, you gave me a heavenly sign to destroy Yerushalayim. He says, I should do your work and then you'll take me to task for it. So he ran away. But he understood the presence of the Rabbeinu Shalom. That's a fundamental difference. You know, the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichrom, were atheists. He was a Yavir with his Orach Shemesh. They asked the Brisker Rav once that why he is so vociferous in his views against secular Zionism. Says, the Gemara says it's better to live in Eretz Yisrael in a city which is basically Yav the Avodah Zarah, rather to live in a city in Chutz La'aretz which is basically of Yidden. So the Brisker Rav said that's true. He says it's a Rambam, Paskin's there for you. But he said the Rambam talking about Yav the Avodah Zarah. So the Rambam didn't talk about Kofar. It's a different Madrega. Those that deny the existence of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam together. That presents a different problem. But Ahasuerus was not, he understood the nature of what he has to do to succeed. The Molochim of that era, they saw the Nevi'im, they knew the Nevi'im. We can't understand how they wish to wiggle around what the Nevi'im had to say, but they did. But they understood the Nevi'im, and they understood they represented the Rabbeinu Shalom. So this is Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus is cunning to the nth degree. He puts out a Haman to carry it out, but he endeavors to provide the spiritual backdrop which will allow Haman to succeed. Haman comes from a totally different standpoint. Haman did not understand Klal Yisrael, and in a certain measure, Haman was not even the enemy of Klal Yisrael that Ahasuerus was. He was not the enemy in a certain regard. Why? There's a very, very strange pasuk in the Megillah. A very strange pasuk. So we says the following. That Haman comes to power. Chol avdei ha-melech ha-shem b'shar ha-melech k'irim v'shtachavim l'Haman. Chayim tzivu lo ya-melech. Melech made him important. So this made waves. You're not living up to what the king wants. So he didn't care, as the Gemara said, because Haman adorned himself with the way the Zohar. Vayagidu l'Haman liro sayamdu divrei Mordechai ki yigid lohem asher hu Yehudi. Because he told them he's a Yehudi, that's why he won't bow down. So they wanted to see, is he going to get away with this? Vayar Haman. So Haman goes, pays attention himself, and he sees, ki ein Mordechai karei mishtachav elo, vayimolei Haman chema. And he's furious. Now, what's the next pasuk? The next pasuk is a very, very difficult pasuk. Vayivez be'enov. It was contemptuous in his eyes. Lishloyach yod b'mordechai levada. to strike at Mordechai himself, ki yigidu lo as am Mordechai, because they told him the nation of Mordechai. Vayivakesh Haman, and he desired lahashmin es kol Yehuda, mashabachom achutz achashverosh am Mordechai, the nation of Mordechai. So even at the end, lahashmin es kol Yehuda, mashabachom achutz achashverosh am Mordechai. What the simple meaning of this pasuk? Just translate the pasuk and have it make sense. Vayivas be'enav, he found it contemptuous. The shloach of Mordechai levado ki yigidu lo asam Mordechai. Vayivakesh Haman lashmir es kol Yehudim. What's the pshat? What happened? Vayivas be'enav the shloach of Mordechai levado. So I believe the pshat in this pasuk is, and I understand that the Gro, the one of the Sforim, also learns this pshat. Haman had one concern. That wasn't the Jews. It was one thing, himself. Haman wanted his power should be unchallenged, above and beyond everything. And this Mordechai shows up and he challenges his power. He doesn't give him his due. So what does he want to do? Wants to kill him. But Haman has a little problem. What does Chazal tell us? There are those that are Isa Masa Zimri, and they're Mavakshin Tzchar Kipinchas. Right? They do what Zimri did, they're involved in oil, but they want credit, Tzchar, as if they're Pinchas. So Haman had a problem. He was disturbed. It's not going to look too good for him if he uses the power of his office just to kill Mordechai. You know, all of a sudden, the Mordechai angered him, and then 2 days later, he's going to show up dead, Mordechai, and disappear. So everyone's going to know where it came from. I mean, who was his enemy? And who had the power to carry it out? So everyone will know that this was Haman's doing. Haman could have done that easily. But Haman had a problem. Haman wanted not only to be Haman, but he wanted to have a name as a loyal servant of the kingdom, a good public servant, you know, who doesn't abuse the power of office. So how's he going to achieve this? So Haman looked over the scene, and he came to a remarkable conclusion. And that's where the pasuk ends. He wanted to kill the Hashmanis called Yehuda Meshabachol Malchus Achashverosh. Fight, what does it end again? Am Mordechai? We don't know who the Yidden are. What is Am Mordechai? Haman wanted to murder Mordechai. And from his amoral or immoral existence, it was acceptable to kill millions of people. It's going to wipe them all off the map. For what reason? Because he wants to kill Mordechai. So Mordechai will get killed in a general assault on the Jewish people. And why is he going to do it? Because the king wants it. Because these people, they're Mafuza, Mafuirad, Ben Amim. You know, if you're from the Jews, he could pull this off. Or go to the king and tell him, listen, this is not a good people to have around. They're spread out. They don't fit in well with the people. And he tells them, listen, if a fly falls in the wine, they take out the fly and they drink it. If you touch it, they spill it in the garbage. You know, all the anti-Semitic things that'll rile them up. Now, he came to the right person. Because for Haman, this was a matter of convenience. Not so much conviction, perhaps, in his case. You know, it could be there's a backdrop of Amalek and etc. They hated the Jewish people anyhow. But for him, the clinching aspect was, it was politically sound. This way he can get what he wants. He's going to eliminate Mordechai. And in what fashion? He's carrying out the king's orders. He's working for the kingdom. A good public servant. He came to Achashverosh, and Achashverosh was a committed enemy of the Jewish people. He didn't need much excuse to sign on to someone taking them out. Maybe he didn't want to do it himself. He wanted to be, as he's going to claim in the Megillah, to be at arm's length from the happenings. But the agenda was his agenda, and in a certain regard, even more so than it was Haman's agenda. Because he understood what Haman didn't understand. That to eliminate the Jewish people, you have to dabble in the Ruchnias too, not only in the Gashmias. So these are the two Sinem. These are the two Sinem of Klal Yisrael. And perhaps we'll understand from this standpoint, if I'm correct, that in reality Achashverosh was a greater Sinem than Haman. At the end of the Megillah, what happens? What the climactic moment of the Megillah, right? The second Mishnah. And Esther issues her appeal that we're about to be destroyed, my people, myself, and my people. So she tells him the following: Kinim karnu aniv ami lahashmid larog laabid. Ve'ilu la'avodim v'shkochus nimkarnu achadai. If it was only a matter of servitude, I wouldn't, you know, make a fuss about it. But ye'enat zor shayve b'neizak ha'melech. He doesn't care that about the king. So she wanted to rile him up against him, that even if he wants to harm his enemies, he should have sold them all the slaves and the king could have pocketed the money. What's he killing them for? So what does the king tell him? Answer. Vayomer HaMelech Achashverosh. Vayomer Esther. Mi uzeh ve'ezehu asher malo li b'la'asos king. Who's the one that wants to do such a thing? I mean, an amazing statement. We don't know that he signed off for the genocide of any other people. But, you know, deniability. Who in the world, you know, would allow such a thing to take place? So what does she do? So what does Chazal tell us? That Gemara says in Megillah that who did she point to? She pointed to Achashverosh. So the Shaila is good. Naniach that Achashverosh was as much of a Sinai as Haman was. Why did she point to Achashverosh? Haman was there too. And Haman's the one she wanted to kill right now. So she should have pointed to Haman. Why did she point to Achashverosh? For what reason? The answer is that the one who really, that he was a greater enemy of the Jewish people, Achashverosh, than Haman himself was. And Mamela, when she asked, the real answer to the question is you. You're not a shutif in this. You are the arch enemy of the Jewish people. Haman has his reasons, his political reasons, you know, that he got involved in this. But who's the real force? Who's the real one that's trying to destroy, that's committed ideologically to destroy Klal Yisrael? That's you. So when she answered, the truth came out. It wasn't he was one of two. No, he was the one. He was number one. So what does it say? The Malach came and he pushed the hand that the hand should wind up pointing to Haman. But she identified Achashverosh as what? He was even a greater enemy of the Jewish people than Haman was. Yeah.
So that makes the miracle 100 times larger. She's committed to the point
more. So now you know why. That's why Perek Aleph is so important. Because in Perek Aleph we see the sinner, the hatred of Achashverosh. What drove him? What drove him was far different than what drove Haman. Haman was a classical political anti-Semite. It advanced his political agenda to be anti-Semitic. Achashverosh wasn't a question of political agenda. He had no political agenda. He had to advance. He ideologically wanted to destroy the Jewish people. So maybe we understand what Ramea said. You can't start from Ish Yehudi, because then you don't understand the full dimension of the Ness. To realize who Achashverosh was, and relative to him, Haman pales in comparison. Now you first understand what the Ness was. And this Jew hater, he's the one that's going to appoint Mordechai as the Mishnah LeMelech. He is going to keep Mordechai in power for many years. This is an entirely different dimension to the Ness. If we started from Ish Yehudi, then we missed the power of the story. Chiddush, what the Rebbeinu Shalom did here. How many killed? But Ahasuerus, he subverted to serve our purposes. So there's an entirely different dimension of the Megillah that we learn from Perek Aleph. Gives us the full measure of the evil. Of the evil of Ahasuerus.
Why did Haman feel like he had to bribe the king to do this?
Well, and what did he bribe the king to do it? Well, there are two things. He may not have realized how much Ahasuerus hates the Jews. And at the end of the day, what did Ahasuerus tell him? Akesef nasun loch, you know. I can do it without the money too. You use it for your henchmen to carry out the job.
Isn't one of the shivas that Ahasuerus showed to and they bring down as a riot the idea that this, what was the royal edict that
he was not always politically the swiftest. That's true.
This sounds like very bright at the whole
point. Yeah, he was not always politically the swiftest. That's what Chazal telling us, and that's part of what saved us. But he was very, very cunning. You know, he didn't usurp power and had such a big empire without being extremely cunning. And he was extremely cunning. So here, so this is the marriage of Ahasuerus and Haman.
Interesting, you're saying that his whole, the way he was trying to turn around Claudius was to his nuss, and what basically turned him around was the fact that he wanted to please his wife.
Listen, that's what he was about. What does the Gemara say? Well, what was Bixen and Seresh's biggest complaint? They didn't have kayach to keep up with his nocturnal activities, the Gemara says in Megillah, you know.
That doesn't mean they can admit it a little bit, huh?
I guess, in a certain regard, yeah.
What about Halilah after Palahu? When the king wakes up and he wants to read his...
That reflects, as the Gemara tells us, that reflects his anxieties.
His
anxieties. He was afraid always they were plotting against him. But that's a schmooze for another time. We'll talk about that yet. It's because of that, because he lived with such fear, is how Mordechai succeeded with Esther. But that's a schmooze for another time. So Ad Kan, this is the introduction to the Megillah Perek Aleph. Thank you.